All right, back to Exodus, shall we? All right, so yesterday we saw 480 years of history in a snap, right? We saw the beginnings of our boy Moses. We saw the first two-thirds of his life in two chapters. We're seeing a guy that, man, started off great in a palace, silver spoon, and then went from that to the opposite extreme to become a nobody, right? And it wasn't until that he was a nobody that God said, now you're usable, now you're humble, and now you're at a place where I can finally deal with you and use you because you're broken, okay? So with that in mind, let's pray, and then let's pick up in chapter 3 and kind of see the rest of the story as we get into the plagues and God's dealing with Pharaoh and Moses and Aaron and the like. So who shall pray for us this morning? Can somebody pray for the coffee while they're at it? Jane, you should pray for the coffee as well. Amen. All right. So we finished off yesterday with God's revelation of who he is, right? The I am, the Yahweh, I will be what I will be. So we saw him repeat to Moses several times that discourse. Pete, you made the observation in there yesterday, which I thought was a great one, of how many times God had to tell Moses, I'm the guy, you're not the guy. We're going to see that even clearer this morning, where is Moses is scared to death to go to Pharaoh, that God will remind him, it's not about you, it's about me, and don't get that backwards, okay? So 3:16, I think, is about where we kind of finished off. Moses is commanded in the midst of that now to return to the elders of the land, remind the people that he is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Verse 17, God says, I will bring you out of the affliction of Egypt, the land of the Canaanite. We looked at all this, to the land flowing with milk and honey. Okay, so that's the idea. He gives a preview in 18 and 19 and following of how Pharaoh is going to respond. And we've seen this and we know it, but again, this is an interesting discourse because this is Romans 9, 10, and 11, right? This is the example that Paul is going to use for sovereign election and hardening and why does Pharaoh not relent? Why does he not let him go? Well, God says, I harden his heart. And then Pharaoh says, well, I harden my own heart. And there's this crazy, weird balance between the two, okay? So verse 19, he says, this is how it's going to go down. All right, so God calls the shot, right? This is the Babe Ruth of, listen, this is how it's going to go down. He's not going to let you go, okay? Now, God's obviously sovereign, and he could compel him to do whatever he wants to, and you're going to see that Pharaoh is a puppet in God's hand, ultimately, and he does with him what he pleases. So from the potter's hand, from whatever clay, he can make a vessel for divine use, and he can make a dog dish, whatever he chooses. And that's the idea of chapter 9 of Romans. Like, God has the freedom with the same lump of clay to do with it whatever he pleases, okay? And he's going to harden Pharaoh's heart, and Pharaoh's going to harden his own heart. And there's a, I think I read it said, God previews and says, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, but six times prior to God hardening Pharaoh's heart, Pharaoh hardens his own heart, okay? So God will tell Moses in the midst of this, I'm going to harden his heart. And why would God do that? What's the purpose of God repeatedly hardening his heart or allowing Pharaoh to harden his own heart? What's the picture behind that? Why would God allow it to go down that way? Okay. And in that, what do we get to see as a result of that?
We get freedom.
Okay. A piece of it. Specifically in this story, if Moses goes to God round one and says, hey, I talked to God. God says go. This is the God that I'm talking about. And Pharaoh says, you're right. Okay. I'm going to let you go. What do we miss about the story of God and who he is?
You get to see God's evidence.
Yeah. Absolutely. We would miss all the plagues. We would miss his power. We would miss his sovereignty. We would miss his ability. And there's a couple places in Scripture where God says, I'm going to flex, and you're going to see it, and you're going to be in awe. Okay? We see it here. We see it maybe at the crossing of the Red Sea when God says, yeah, I'm going to open up that body of water and you're going to walk across it on dry land, you and 1.5 to 3 million people, right? We see it on the cross in a kind of a backwards way of God killing his son that we would have life. But there's not a lot of spots that we see his magnificence on display. This is one of the few, okay? Turn real quick to Exodus chapter 12. And before we kind of get into the plagues, I want to show you why God says we're going to have plagues. Exodus 12, 2. No, not 2. Dang it, Michael. 12. There was a 1 in there that I didn't see. There you go. Jared, read that.
For I will go through the land of Egypt on that night, and I will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord.
So as you look through the big picture purpose of the plagues, what does God say the 10 plagues are about, according to verse 12? Yeah, so what is God doing to each one of the gods of Egypt? You versus me, who wins? Oh, me, God of the Nile. Okay, you versus me, God of frogs, who's going to win? Oh, me again. Okay, how about me and you, God of the gnats, who's going to win? Oh, me again. Every plague is basically an open-handed slap to the gods of Egypt, saying, I am bigger than all of your gods, and he systematically works through them all the way to the god of basically life and death, which ultimately would have had Pharaoh in mind along with Ra, the sun god, and others, but he's executing his judgments against their gods, okay? And if you were an Egyptian, you would have seen this. You would have known, wait, we worship a god of the Nile. You turn the river to blood. Our god should be able to remedy that. Oh, we can't. Dang it, right? Only God can. So this is purposeful. This isn't just happenstance as to why he does it that way. Okay, I'll bring you guys a chart next week, to kind of show you how I chart, so that when you chart Leviticus, you can at least get an example. And I'll bring you a Genesis chart as well. Check that. Would you guys prefer that I bring you hard copies of charts or upload them onto Facebook so you have digital copies? I'll do both. How about that? Okay, we'll do both. I can do both. This is not an either or. It's a both and. We can do both. You see how easy I am? Tell my wife that I'm so easy and relaxed and fun to be with, okay? So that's the idea, okay? Verse 20, back to chapter 3, verse 20, I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles, which I shall do in the midst of you, and after that he will let you go. I will grant, in verse 21, this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall be when you go, you will not go empty-handed. Here's what's fascinating. 22, every woman shall ask of her neighbor and every woman who lives in her house for articles of silver and gold and clothing, and you will put them on your sons and your granddaughters. Thus you will plunder the Egyptians. You're going to leave like you just won a battle. You're not going to lift a hand, but you're going to say, I'm going to take that, and I need this, and I need a pot and pan, and I need some Calphalon, and I need some silver, and they'll say, take it and go. Okay, so God is going to execute judgment, and they're going to win this battle as if it were. Okay, so chapter 4, we've seen two excuses thus far from Moses, right? What were they? What was the first one? Who am I? Second one? Who are you? Okay, third, we're now going to see excuse 3, and he's going to tell them they won't listen. Okay, so that's going to be his next deal. Okay, so 4 verse 1, let's pick up there.
And Moses said, what if they will not believe me or listen to what I have to say? For they may say, the Lord has not appeared to you.
All right, so he's wanting some evidence, okay? And God's going to give him 2 things, a staff, okay? And he's going to show him, also via his hand, 2 kind of real-life examples. Okay, the first one is his staff. He says, what do you have in your hand? Moses says, a staff. Verse 3 says, throw it on the ground. He threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent in verse 3, and Moses ran from it. Verse 4, stretch out your hand, he says to Moses, and pick up the snake by its tail. Now, for those of you that have watched Man vs. Wild, you do not ever, ever, ever pick up a snake by its tail, so this was a dumb idea, especially one that was as venomous as probably the one that God just made. So bad idea, but Moses does it. He caught it, and it became a staff back in his hand. Okay, so evidence of God's power. Okay, And he says in verse 5 that they may believe that the Lord, the God of the fathers, of your fathers, has appeared to you. So that's going to be one of the external displays of evidence that he's going to show them. Okay. Verse 6, we get a second example. Okay, Dave, pick up there in verse 6.
Again, the Lord said to him, put your hand inside your cloak. And he put his hand inside his cloak. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous like snow.
Okay, so he has instantaneous leprosy. Okay, leprosy was a rough disease back in that day. Hansen's disease, I think, is the other specific name for it. We'll see it all over the book of Leviticus. But it's a disease with a kind of a bigger picture. You're going to see it several times used when people have hardened themselves or have disobeyed God. God will give them leprosy, and it's as if to say, you have no spiritual insight and no feeling. I'm going to give you a disease that physically you lose all feeling. So it's kind of a really cool wordplay. Okay, what happens with leprosy is literally your extremities start to rot from the end out. So with people that are leprous, you'll see it in their hands, you'll see it in their feet, you'll see it on the tips of their noses and on their ears. Their flesh literally just begins to rot off their body. It's a filthy disease. It's rough to have. And the reason it's so bad is you begin to lose any sensitivity in your nerve endings. So you can put your hand on a hot stove and have zero idea that you are scalding your flesh because you can no longer feel it. And God says, exactly. And because you can no longer feel me spiritually, you're going to get a disease where it's symbolic because you can't feel physically. Okay, so leprosy was a big deal, often incurable. They would put, obviously, leper colonies. You guys know a lot of the history behind that. But it's rough. Okay, so he has leprosy. That would have caused him to panic. Verse 7, put your hand back in your, I like cloak. Mine says bosom again. It's always odd. Put your hand in your bosom. Like, where's that exactly? Okay. So he puts it back in his cloak and took it out, and behold, it was normal like the rest of his flesh. Okay, so God says, I have control over all those things. Okay, verse 8, it shall come about if they do not believe you or heed the witness of the first sign, then they may believe me with the witness of the last sign. So these are symbolic of the plagues that are to come and what's going to take place. Verse 9, he even previews God does the first of the plagues with the Nile, okay, that you're going to be able to turn the Nile to blood. That's going to be the first thing that you're going to do, okay? So we've heard now three excuses for Moses, okay? Who am I? Who are you? They won't listen. God says, I'm going to give you some audio visuals that should be very, very clear to them. 4:10, he now offers another excuse, and here it is. Can you hear Val Kilmer's voice in the back of your head as he says that, right? If you guys haven't watched Prince of Egypt, shame on you. You're not saved. Go watch it. It's a great movie. So they do a good job with this. The plague specifically, they do a great job with in this interaction between Moses and God. Shame on you that you're all like, yes, I feel it. It's good, okay? So he reminds him, look, I'm in charge, and Moses continues to doubt this. And I think it's, I don't know, Moses continues to go back to this place where he says, I can't speak, I'm not eloquent. I wonder if he's not referring just to the fact that like he doesn't have oratory skills. I think he's saying, look, when I speak, nothing happens. Like, nobody does anything, right? I rose up in the palace, I came out, I killed an Egyptian, I beat my chest and said, follow me, and everybody went, who are you that you made us judge over us? So it may be not just the idea of, like, I can't speak, but it's like, my speaking is ineffective. Nobody listens. It's like talking to a wall. People don't care. So I think that's partially what Moses is saying. It's not that he can't speak. It's like, listen, God, I'm the worst public speaker ever, right? I'm trying to rally a group of kids to eat lollipops, and they won't do it, right? Like, this is the easiest thing ever, and they won't listen to me, right? Here's Flaming Hot Cheetos. Eat some. They go, no, we're going to have some vegetables, right? That's a bad idea. So I think that's part of why Moses feels that sense of insecurity, because he's like, I've tried this before, and I failed. So I spoke, I did these things. I'm not an effective public speaker, okay? I can't motivate people to, you know, breathe oxygen. This is silly. Get somebody else, okay? So God reminds him who he is and what he's going to do. And then Moses has the audacity to pop off one more time. Verse 13. Please, Lord, now send the message by whomever you will, which is code for what? Anybody else than me, right? Pick anybody, right? But not me. And then it says, God's anger burned against Moses, and he said, is there not your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently, and moreover, behold, he is coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You are to speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be your mouth as his mouth, and I will teach you what you are to do. So you need a whoobie? Here's your whoobie. Moses, Aaron can come with you, your brother. You're going to be reunited, right? He hasn't seen his brother in 40 years, possibly, okay, because he's been in Egypt, and Aaron is back in the Promised Land, Egypt, rather, as contained. So they're going to meet at Mount Horeb. So we're going to see that here in a minute. So they're going to get reunited, but God's anger is, he's frustrated with Moses because this is no longer it's an excuse. He's at this point bordering on disobedience. God told him to go. God has said, listen, I've solved your problems. I've answered all four of your excuses. Okay, you're okay. I'm okay. I can do really cool stuff. They're going to listen. Now go. And Moses is just hesitant. So I think at this point in the game, he's wrestling with disobedience. And that's why God, I think, is frustrated to a whole new degree. Okay. So that's the idea. So Aaron's going to get to go with them. Not God's favorite. Okay, Aaron's going to cause trouble later on, right? So Moses is going to go up the hill to get the Ten Commandments, and Aaron's going to have some new suggestions as to what gods they should worship and get Israel in a bunch of trouble. So Moses is very clearly still the guy, but he needed a binky to go with him, and that's his binky. Okay, so verse 18 now. This is kind of cool. I want you to notice just a couple qualities about Moses that I really like about this guy. 18, watch what he does before he goes to Egypt.
And Moses went back to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said to him, let me go back to my own people in Egypt to see if any of them are still alive.
So what does he do with Jethro?
He asked permission.
He asked permission to leave, right? Now, could he just rolled in town and said, listen, God just spoke to me. I'm leaving, right? He just heard an audible voice from God. He's had a conversation, but he goes back to Jethro and says, please allow me to leave, right? So I like that about Moses, that he's humble. He asks permission. He honors the authority that he's under. And what's Jethro's response in verse 18? Go in peace, like green light, buddy. We're good. So absolutely, okay? He goes back to Midian. Lord said to Moses in Midian, go back to Egypt, for all the men who were seeking your life are dead. The old Pharaoh's dead. Okay? And notice who he takes with him in verse 20.
So Moses took his wife and sons, put them on a donkey, and started back to Egypt.
All right. So he takes his wife, Zipporah, and his two sons. We heard about one of them, Gershom, and then the other one, I forget his name. So, but he's got two kids that are going with him. So we're going to see later on in the story that Moses at some point had sent his wife and kids back to Egypt, or back to Midian rather, out of Egypt, in kind of the midst of how the story unfolds. But initially they go with them and they're seeing all this stuff in terms of what's happening. Okay, 21, the Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders which I have put in your power. I will harden his heart, so that he will not let the people go. So God calls a shot. He hasn't hardened Pharaoh's heart yet, but he's going to. And you will say to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel, my son, my firstborn. Okay? Now, 23 through in following, this is weird. This is out of left field. It is an odd text. Y'all figure it out. So, Dave, pick up in 23.
And I say to you, let my son go, that he may serve me. If you refuse to let him go, behold, I will kill your firstborn son.
Okay, sorry, this is still the rest of that last verse. So God predicts, here's what's going to happen. That's the 10th plague, right? I will kill your firstborn, which just in Israeli culture, in Egyptian culture, that's a big deal, right? Taking someone's firstborn son, no bueno. Any of your sons for that matter, but firstborn bad, okay? 24 is where it gets weird.
At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met him and sought to put him to death.
Okay, the him is Moses, okay? So Moses is leaving, he's being obedient, and the text says in verse 24, as he's leaving in the lodging place, wherever he's at on this road, the Lord met Moses and sought to put Moses to death. Like, wait, what just happened? Moses is being obedient, he's had excuses this whole time, and now God wants to kill him, okay? In 25 and 26, we get some indication as to why God may have been ticked off.
Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet with it and said, surely you are bridegroom of blood to me. So he let him alone. It was then that she said, a bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision.
Okay, what is going on? Okay, so Zipporah steps in after we get this dialogue from God, takes a flint stone and circumcises her child, takes the foreskin and throws it at Moses' feet and says, you're now a bridegroom of blood to me. So apparently, what do you infer here? Why is God ticked at Moses? What has he not done? Circumcised his kid, right? Which is a fairly big deal in that culture, right? So Moses is in Midian, where circumcision is not a big deal, and he's lived like a Midianite. And God says, no. You do not get a free pass. You do not get to obey what you want to obey just because you're Moses. You circumcise your kid and you walk with me and be obedient to what I've said. So it seems like that's kind of what's going on. Potentially, you see what appears to be some frustration or whatever on Zipporah's side, but her actions end up saving Moses' life, right? So maybe the issue was between the two of them, she didn't want this done, and Moses relented and said, great. And God says, no. You're going to lead. You're going to follow me and not the gods of Zipporah, your wife. So whatever it is, God was not screwing around. Like, I'll find someone else to do this job, but you're going to be obedient. Okay? And I think the great lesson for all of us in the midst of that is, even as the guy in charge, Moses does not have, he is not the exception. He doesn't get to do as he chooses. He still has to be obedient and do the same things that he's asking the people to do. Okay, so he learns a lesson early on that would have been interesting. Now, the whole bridegroom of blood to me, I have no idea what that means. Okay, and commentators seem to be as confused as I do, which is encouraging. So I don't know. So y'all figure it out. So I've read lots, and they all seem to circumcision or something along those lines with blood and whatever. So, but 24 through 26, it's just like, where in the heck did that come from? Okay, so there you go. 27. Moses and Aaron are running in a field towards each other, and they hug and they cry, and there's pretty music playing in the background. Okay, that's what happened. So they see each other. They meet at the mountain of God, so at Mount Sinai. So these two are reunited. Moses in 28 communicates what's happened. Here's what we're going to do. They go to the people. 31, they communicate to all the people, and watch the initial response of the people. Watch means read.
And they believed, and when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and worshiped.
So, what's their initial response? Believe. Like, heck yeah, this is great, right? In 30, we find out that Moses does all these miracles, like, look at my hand, it's leprous, look at my hand, it's not anymore, right? Look at my staff, oh, it's a snake, oh, it's not anymore, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, you're awesome. So they have an initial sense of belief, right? So, and who wouldn't? 400 years in slavery, there's a guy that says, hey, I'm going to get you out. They've been oppressed to the point they're like, yeah, we remember you, but whatever. So come on. So they're initially excited about this deal, okay? This is going to be one of the most fickle group of people that you've ever seen, okay? Initially, they're great, okay? When God turns the screws on them later, they're going to change their tune a bit. But initially, these guys are super excited about, Andrew, what's up, dude? How are you? Former resident right there. Dude, absolutely, you've got a backstage pass. Come on, we'd love to have you. How many years ago did you go through? Two now?
Two, yeah.
So, good to see you, my friend. You working on stuff next door?
What was that?
Are you working over here? We're glad to have you. This year's residents make really weak coffee, so if you want some, it's over there. So, that was not fair.
Did you even hear that?
I just took a backhand and slap at you. It's okay. Just being funny. I chose to blame you for the coffee this morning, so. I'm teasing. All right, so initially, these guys are fired up, okay? So they're ready to roll. Chapter 5, verse 1. This is going to be the speech that he's going to give to Pharaoh. So watch this.
Watch me read. Watch means read.
Yes, always. You're learning, young Padawans. So proud of you.
Afterward, Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness.
So what is... when it's not just go, okay, which is sometimes how we paint the picture, what has God commanded his people to do? Have a feast, which is like they're going to have a buffet, right? So that's good. But what is that a bigger picture of? What are they going to do? And we're going to see it even more clearly in the text. They're going to worship, okay? We're going to leave this pagan place. We're going to take a 3-day journey out of here. We're going to stop. We're going to eat. And then we're going to worship our God, okay? So that's going to be continually the battle cry for Moses. We're going to leave, and we're going to do this. Now, how about this? Was Moses dead on when he said, this is what Pharaoh is going to ask? And sure enough, he does. Who, verse 2, is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. So, who am I? And he's going to say, who are you? Yeah.
So was he originally asking, like, can we go do this thing and then come back?
It doesn't seem like that. Pharaoh's going to suggest that multiple times. Like, hey, how about you go and then come back? Hey, how about you go and take your... you know, leave your wives and kids here, or how about you take your wives and kids, but leave your cattle? And Moses is going to say, we're leaving. So, you get the implication that it's permanent. Okay, and Pharaoh's not stupid. Why would he let his people go? Why would he let Israel go? What's the benefit of them staying? I've got a huge workforce, right? I get to eat bonbons and watch Oprah every day while these people work. Why would I let them go? Right? Absolutely not. So. He's not dumb. He's got a great workforce, and he's got his thumb on him, so it doesn't make any sense, okay? So Moses answers in verse 3. You want to know who my God is? This is who my God is. Verse 3.
Then they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to Yahweh our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with a sword.
So he's a God that's going to fall upon us with pestilence and sword. So who is our God? He's big. He's a big deal, okay? So you don't want to screw with him, Pharaoh. So that's the idea, okay? So we need to go. I'm not going to change my tune, but that's what's going to happen, okay? Verse 4, the king of Egypt said to them, now he's going to turn, sing a different tune, I guess, for Moses and Aaron and the people. Why do you draw the people away from their work? Get back to their labor. So Pharaoh's frustrated because he thinks you're actually wanting to get the people to stop working, okay? In verse 17, we'll just skip there real quick. This is the accusation that the people, that they make against the Israelites. Read that.
Which verse is that?
17.
Pharaoh said, lazy, that's what you are, lazy. That is why you keep saying, let us go and sacrifice to the Lord.
So what does Pharaoh say their rationale is? What's the reasoning for wanting to go? He's lazy. You don't want to go worship. You just don't want to work, right? You're all lazy. So here's what we're going to do. Pharaoh says, before you made bricks, I gave you straw and you had a quota. Now you're going to make bricks with no straw. You go find your own straw and the quota is not going to change. Okay, so you want to leave? Here's my answer. So he ramps it up and causes an even greater frustration with them. So he accuses them of being lazy. In verse 8, we see it again. Kind of the same thing repeated. So he says, let's ramp up the difficulty and let's see if Moses has the audacity to ask again. Okay. Verse 13, the taskmasters pressed them, saying, complete your work quota, your daily amount, just as when you had straw. So nothing changes. Of course, they weren't able to do it, okay? Verse 15, the foremen that are over the people of Israel say, why do your servants deal this way? Like, why are you handling us this way? Verse 16, there is no straw given to your servants, yet you keep saying to us, make bricks, and behold, your servants are being beaten, but it's not our fault, it's the fault of your own people. Like, of course we don't meet our quota. It's your fault, right? That doesn't go well when you tell your boss that, who doesn't like you in the first place and just wants to whip you, okay? And their response, again, is verse 17, no, y'all are lazy, okay? Suckers, you're going to keep making brick and like it, okay? Verse 18, go back to work. You must deliver the same quota of bricks, okay? So how do you think the people are feeling about Moses right now? Not so good, right? Thanks a lot, Moses, okay? And again, you think Moses is feeling the insecurity of God? I told you, I speak, and here's what happens. The opposite of what I say. Let my people go. No, how about we ramp up the difficulty in their lives, okay? So Moses had a sense of like, I don't ever handle this really well, right? So you can see the tension in his own life as to why he would feel that sense, okay? Verse 20, they left Pharaoh's presence, and they met Moses and Aaron, and they were waiting for them, okay? Verse 21, the Lord said to them, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight. and in the sight of the servants to put a sword in their hand to kill us. So this is the people's response to Moses' great speech, okay? Thanks a lot. How about next time you keep your mouth shut? Now Pharaoh wants to kill us. We were better off before you showed up, okay? So again, when your goal is to deliver the people and you get the opposite, okay, you know, this is like Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator right now. You're about to get fired, okay, because you're sad. For any of you that watch football and like the Cowboys. If you don't, you're all sinners. So, for not liking the Cowboys. All right, so there you go, okay? 22, watch this. This is pretty cool with Moses. The people bark at him. Okay, this is a great Saving Private Ryan theology right here. The people bark at him. Who does Moses bark at? God, read that. So the people bark at him, and he barks uphill, not downhill. You guys remember that from Saving Private Ryan? If you haven't seen that movie, you're also sinners and not saved. You need to see that as well. It's great, minus the violence and all that stuff. But Tom Hanks' character talks about, like, they never hear him complain, okay? And the idea is, Hanks says, listen, y'all complain to me. I complain up the food chain, not down the food chain. You compliment down, you complain up, okay? So good lesson in life. And Moses does that continually. And his knee-jerk reaction had to be to say, you stupid, obstinate people, like literally grab them by the neck and say, you know, like that's, you can feel the tension in this life. And the one time that he loses his cool, he has to pay for it, okay? So he has some pretty high expectations. But you're going to see a cool theme with Moses in that you get to kill these people like 100 times over. And Moses is just patient. He goes back to God and says, Lord, what are you doing? I don't understand. These people hate me. All I'm trying to do is obey you. I've done exactly what you've asked, right? You guys ever been there in God's will? Lord, I'm doing exactly what you told me to do. Everything is going wrong. And if I looked at my circumstance to dictate whether or not I'm in your will, it would look like I'm not, right? It's kind of a fascinating picture of how often we get that backwards, right? We'll look at our surroundings and go, oh, green pastures, and you know, it's the Microsoft screensaver, all is good. God clearly must be pleased with my life, right? There's green meadows and everything. Yeah, it's kind of odd that, like, Moses just has this free interaction to kind of come and go as he pleases, right? So he's not out making bricks, right, which had to tick the people off even more, right? Like, what are you doing all day, right? Are you with Pharaoh eating bonbons and watching Oprah? Because you're not out here with us making bricks, nor is your brother. You're just coming out here for an hour or two, right? And you make things worse every time you show up. So,
like, could it be because the Pharaoh knew Moses? Like, in the movie?
Yeah. I'm just saying. I would say because Moses has been gone so long, he's out. So now why Aaron has the freedom to kind of come and go with Moses is a whole nother, right? He had the freedom to come meet him at Mount Horeb. So he left Egypt, went into Midian, or into at least the Sinai Peninsula, goes to meet his brother. I don't know. So maybe Moses was soft-handed and couldn't handle laying bricks. I don't know. So for whatever reason, he does have that freedom, okay? So there you go, all right? So Moses is now going to, he goes to the Lord, okay? God is going to now speak to Moses, and he sees that, like, buddy, you're in a bad spot, right? He's crushed. He realizes the people that are not a big fan of him, and God is going to do a great job of just kind of rekindling Moses' fire, okay? Pick up in 6 verse 1.
God also said to Moses, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, where they lived as aliens.
What does that mean? Verse 3, I did not make my name known to them. To Abraham, to Jacob, to Isaac. In reference to chapter 3.
Like how he said, he gave Moses a kind of name.
Yeah. he walked through the I am. Now, Moses, I think, left more confused than when he started, but he says, man, listen, I've revealed myself to you in ways that I haven't revealed myself to anybody, right? Normally, how does God speak to all the patriarchs? Dreams. How does he speak to Moses? Face to face, and we're never going to see that again, okay? So he handles Moses very differently, and he's telling him that, right? And Moses hasn't seen the full extent of that yet, but he said, listen, you and I have something special and different than the way I've communicated with others, and we're going to see God tell him that as much. Like, I used to communicate with people in dreams. God's going to say that when he rebukes Miriam and Aaron for something stupid they're going to do later. He says, listen, y'all should have known better. Like, I speak with really important people like this, and I speak like this to Moses, and y'all should know better, okay? He's the guy, okay? Now, in 3 and 4, just notice how many times the word I is said, and then in 6 and following, God is going to be very, very clear about who all this is going to come from.
Back to the end of 5, where Moses, like, complains to God or whatever, mm-hmm. Does that mean it's okay to complain to God?
Absolutely. God already knows you're complaining. He already knows how you feel, right? So it's just saying how you feel. So I think being honest with, that's part of just being honest with God. Like, Lord, I'm ticked. I'm frustrated. I'm, yeah.
What's the difference between that and when God got mad at Moses for, like, complaining, like, yeah, saying, I don't
want to
go?
Yeah, I think one is disobedience. One is him just being gut-level honest of, like, that went really well. Like, you know. So, yeah, I think he's just being, he had complained 4 times already. And then he's going to, you know, say, God, somebody else. And I think God at that point's like, listen, no. And he's frustrated. I think this one is just a, like, he just came back from a really difficult ministry experience and went, that went really poorly. And he's crushed. So God has to remind him and say, okay. So I think in the midst of it, God knows his heart and where he's at. And he's like, man, yeah, this is Abraham coming out of Egypt. Like, dude, you just did stupid, right? And this isn't the same in that he's in sin. But he realizes, buddy, you're hurt and you need me right now to buoy your spirits and encourage you, okay? And that's exactly what Moses is going to get. Look at 6 and following. Pete, read 6 through 8 there.
Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out of from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from the slavery to them. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm with great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God. And you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who has brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians.
Keep going.
I will bring you into the land that I swore I'd give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you for possession. I am the Lord.
Isn't that cool? Like bookends, verse 6, say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, okay? Last sentence of verse 8, I am the Lord, and everything in between it is I. Moses, where are you in here? You're nowhere. You're a tool. I'm going to use you, but I am the one doing everything. So he reminds him, listen, this isn't about you. Your failing last chapter is not about you. This is about me and my plan. I am accomplishing something. And literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 times in 3 verses, God says, I. And he's telling Moses, listen, it's not about you. Okay. And that's, again, why does he have to drill down so hard on that subject? Because Moses doesn't get it. Just like we don't get it, right? Well, I can't speak and I can't this. And God says, that's fine. I don't need you, right? I need me to be powerful. And by the way, I am. So, don't worry about it, okay? So, but our insecurities and stuff like that come out, okay? So Moses, verse 9, spoke thus to the sons of Israel, that they did not listen to Moses on account of the despondency and cruel bondage. The Lord spoke to Moses in verse 10, tell Pharaoh to let the people go out of his hand. Verse 12, yet another complaint. Moses says, I am unskilled in speech. Again, I think that's kind of the link to, listen, we tried this once, it didn't work. Last chapter, remember that, God? And you see the disconnect, like God tells Moses, it's not about you, it's about me. And then Moses says, hey, wait a second, but I'm unskilled in speech. And he's like, you're not understanding, Moses, right? So thank God, it's very familiar in my life. Like, Mike, you're not getting it, right? So there you go, all right? 14 and following, we get kind of a long list of a genealogy kind of in the midst of this, of the sons of Jacob, okay, and all the people that ultimately are going to come out. One that I just want to mention to you that we touched on before, Verse 23, here's Aaron. Okay, this is Moses' brother. Okay, he marries Elisheba. Okay, and he has four kids, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Itamar. Okay, and then you get another mention in verse 25, Aaron's son Eleazar married one of the daughters of Puthiel. She bore him Phinehas. Okay, so Aaron's grandson is Phinehas. He has four kids, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Itamar. Okay, there's a really cool tradition today in Israel where they have what's called a Torah portion. So every day there is a portion of the Torah that is read. So Genesis through Deuteronomy. Okay, and if you have a kid born on that day, that is their Torah portion forever. And often what will happen is they will find from that chapter of Scripture names that are mentioned, and they will name their kids based on that chapter of Scripture. Okay, Ronan, the guy that we're going to meet in Israel, his youngest kid was named after this. His Torah portion is Leviticus 16, which is probably the one of, if not the most important chapters in all of the Old Testament. Okay, it's fascinating. Okay, there's four names that are mentioned, or five: Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Itamar. He named his kid Itamar. Okay, based on that. So it's kind of a cool story. And you'll find out why he named him that as opposed to Nadab or Abihu. So he chose some other names, okay? 25, Phinehas is probably one of the most, like, Mel Gibson Braveheart guys in your Bible. This guy is bad, okay? He is good, bad, not bad, 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 okay? So you're going to like Phinehas when we get into his story in Numbers 10 and following. He's a stud, okay? So you're going to see a lot more of him, okay? But just wanted to make you aware of kind of that and kind of a cool tradition that exists even today, okay? So on to chapter 7, God is commanding him to go anyway. So he's going to go. Now he's going to speak more to the people of Israel, okay? 7 verse 1, let's pick up there.
God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet.
What does that mean? I will make you as God to Pharaoh. What do gods do? Yeah, certainly, right? What else does a god have the authority to do? Whatever the heck they want to, right? So you're going to be as God to Pharaoh. What you say goes, and I'm going to make you that way, okay? But, verse 3, I will harden Pharaoh's heart that I may multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. Again, that's the purpose. I'm going to show the people who I am. I'm going to show you who I am, and you're going to get it. This is the third time that God has said, I will harden Pharaoh's heart. Okay? Verse 7, we get a bit of a chronological anchor down there. Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron was 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. Okay? So, just so you know, right? So, we've seen, again, Moses' life divvied up into thirds. He's going to live to 120, so he's got 40 years left, and we're going to go from there, okay? So we've seen one encounter between Pharaoh and Moses. How did that go? Not so well, okay? People got more work. Pharaoh kind of laughed at him and said, how about you get out of here, you lazy, good-for-nothing people? Go make more bricks, okay? Here is encounter number 2, verse 8 of chapter 7. Lord spoke to Moses, saying, when Pharaoh speaks to you, saying, work a miracle, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff, throw it on the ground like before, and make it a serpent. Okay, so Moses does this. Verse 10, Moses and Aaron come to Pharaoh. They did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron threw his staff down before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. So, hey, look at this, Pharaoh, we can do it, right? And God accomplished exactly what he said he was going to accomplish. Problem is, verse 11, read that.
Then Pharaoh also called for the wise men and the sorcerers, and they also, the magicians of Egypt, did the same with their secret art.
Is that kind of creepy to you? What does that mean? Yeah, they had staffs that they turned into serpents. Like, oh, I don't know what that is. That's weird, okay? But that's apparently these guys had legitimate powers that were, if they're not from the Lord, it's either one or the other. So they're demonic from other gods, okay? No bueno. Each one threw down his staff, and they turned into serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed their staffs. You guys remember that scene in The Prince of Egypt? It's one of the coolest scenes. They're having this like back and forth discourse between, I'm telling you, there's good theology there, except for Callie said she got out of that, it's bad. They're having this discourse, and like They're displaying the shadows up on the wall of all these staffs. In Moses' staff, you see the shadow swallows all the other staff. I guess it's a serpent at this point. And it's kind of, it's in the background. It's not really seen by Pharaoh. That's kind of the impression that you get. And they completely disregard it. But it's really, really well done. So pretty cool, okay? Aaron's staff swallows their staffs. Verse 13, Pharaoh's heart was hardened and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Okay, so he says this is exactly how it's going to go. Okay, so now we're going to move from encounters to plagues. Okay, so 7:14, we're going to get our first plague and they're going to go all the way through the end of chapter 11. We're going to see it ramp up. Okay, and each one of the plagues again is a rebuke to an Egyptian god. And each one of them progressively gets... I guess worse to a degree in terms of how it happens. God is going to protect Israel from some of the plagues and make them local to the Egyptians. And other plagues, he's going to heap onto the Israelites as well. And they all get to deal with it. Okay, so the first three, Egypt is going to be, or Israel is going to be exempt, if you will. The rest of them are going to happen kind of throughout the land. Okay, so 7:14, let's pick up there and watch the first plague.
Say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to say to you, let my people go, so that they may worship me in the desert.
Now, some commentators think that potentially what Pharaoh was doing when he's going down to the Nile isn't just to bathe. That may have been part of his worship like ceremony. It would have been a part of their worship of the Nile and those sorts of things. So imagine that. Moses comes down to Pharaoh, who's in church. He's worshiping. And he interrupts him to say, my God's bigger than yours. Let my people go. Your heart is hardened. Like that, that would have really frustrated him, right? So he tells him that, okay? He says, but you've not listened up to this point. By this, you shall know, verse 17, that I am the Lord. We're going to see that repeated several times. I will strike the water that is in this Nile, that is in my hand, and it shall be turned to blood. The fish that are in the Nile will die, and the Nile will become foul, and the Egyptians will find difficulty in drinking water from the Nile. Now, if these progressively get worse, when you take away the drinking source from a nation that lives in the desert, it's kind of a big deal, right? So this doesn't start like at low-level, easy stuff. It's pretty significant. So they're going to find kind of an end around to figure it out. But that's what happens. So God, through Moses, strikes the Nile River. Verse 20, Moses lifts up his staff, strikes the water in the sight of Pharaoh and all of his servants, and all the water that was in the Nile was turned to blood. Now, that's a big deal, right? Water to blood in that amount of water. Verse 21, the fish that were in the Nile die. The Nile became foul. They couldn't drink from it. The blood was through all the land of Egypt. So this is disgusting. This is a big deal, okay? Now, 22, the Egyptians, or the magicians, do the same thing with their secret arts, and Pharaoh was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord said. Now, what do you infer that the magicians in verse 22 do? It says they do the same with their secret arts. No, that would have actually been really helpful. What do? They turn water into blood. Well, thanks a lot. Like, we've done that. What would have been the miracle? How about you undo it? How about you be helpful and undo the blood and turn it back into water so that we can drink again, okay? They can't. So, you know, how they did it or what they did it with, you know, they show on the cartoon, again, that they turn a pot of water into blood. So, super, okay? But Pharaoh's convinced, oh, yeah, we're tit for tat. I've got as much power as you do or my gods do. So, no, okay? Has no concern even for this. So, the Egyptians dug around the Nile for water to drink, and they could not drink the water of the Nile. So the idea is that they, the fertile lands of the Nile would have been, you know, when you dug around them and you could, the water would be filtered by the soil, and they found water to drink in other ways. Okay, so plague one, you get blood in the Nile, and the result is new. Okay, so again, there's a couple gods that would have been against. It's not important that you know who they are, but they worshiped a god of the Nile. A couple different gods that would have been included in that first rebuke from God, okay? So, let's go from blood, now let's go to frogs, okay? 7 days, God leaves it like that. And then 8 verse 1, read that.
Then the Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and say to him, thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all your country with frogs.
Okay, so they worshipped a couple gods that literally had the form of a frog. Okay, so Happy, H-A-P-I, or Hept, H-E-Q-T, was another one. Okay, however you pronounce a Q and a T together, I don't know. But they were gods in the form of a frog, or some part of them. Okay, so there you go. So that would have been a rebuke to them. Okay, the Nile will swarm with frogs, which is, you know, unpleasant when you get a bunch of frogs coming out of the Nile that consume you. Verse 3, watch where they go. Nothing like waking up with frogs in your bed, right? That's awesome. So that's not pleasant. Okay, so annoying. Not, you know, they're not cockroaches or, you know, maybe things that would be considered worse, but that's not pleasant. They're in your kneading bowls. They're in your kitchen. They are everywhere. Okay, we had a cricket plague in 1 year in Texas. It was the oddest thing. Like, there was a summer where they just infested the city, and they were everywhere. Like, you couldn't go out at night and walk anywhere without hearing. It was filthy, right? And they all came to the light, and you would walk from the parking lot to some place of business, and they all came into the light, and you would just crunch crickets. And it happened for a few weeks, and it was just weird. I don't know where all they came from and why they wanted to hang out in Denton, but they did. And it was just odd, right? But they weren't in your home, they weren't in your bed, they primarily stayed outside, but they were everywhere, and it was just tenfold what normal cricket population was supposed to be. So anyway, so I guess we killed them all by walking on them, and that took care of that. So pretty sure it wasn't a plague, but it felt like it. So anyway, you can only imagine, right? Yes, and it smelled just like that. You're like, oh gosh, what is that rank dead cricket smell, okay? So now God's going to remove the dead frogs, and if we can make Jane vomit, we get bonus points this morning. What do you think that was like once God kills all the frogs? Yeah, what's that heap of rotting frogs smell like? What do you think, Jane? What did that smell like? Not yet, huh? Dang it. Okay. It seems like it went back. So I thought it was in there somewhere. He cleans up most of the other stuff, or there's like an end to the plague. Do you guys see anywhere where it says it stopped? I thought it did, but I may have missed it. Yeah, I think this gives us a timeline to the next plague. But I got the impression that it did, but I may be wrong. So, okay. So Pharaoh ends up getting at least frustrated that they're the amount of frogs that are there. And the magicians help a lot because they brought out more frogs. So, again, thank you very much for 7 for you guys. And you're right. Pharaoh had to look at them at some point and go, really, guys? Like, that's what you got. You got more problem? We don't need more problem. We need less problem. Okay. So, Pharaoh comes to Aaron and Moses in verse 8 and says, entreat the Lord that he would remove the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let you go, that you may go sacrifice to the Lord. And Moses says, dang, maybe I can speak. This is working out fantastic. Now, okay, now you want to listen. Verse 9, watch how Moses responds to Pharaoh. So how does he handle that? What do you like about that? Just in terms of like a Moses' personality. Yeah. You want to feel important? I'll let you feel important. It's up to you. You tell me when, right? So just, again, a humility. He's not being a punk to Pharaoh, right? He had every opportunity to do that, but he's cordial. Like, that's not what he wants to say. Listen, Pharaoh, just let us go. I don't wish this upon you. I don't hate you. I don't wish bad on you. I want you to let our people go. Like, I have to do this, right? So stop now, because it's only going to get worse. So I like the way that Pharaoh or Moses is very respectful to him, right? Even in the midst of difficulty. And you can sense that he has a true compassion for Pharaoh and the people, for he knows what's coming, and he doesn't wish ill upon any of them. Okay? So, verse 10, he says, tomorrow. And he says, great, may it be according to your word that you may know that the Lord, that there was no one like the Lord our God. You say, tomorrow, I'll let God know, and it'll be tomorrow. So, fantastic. Okay? Verse 11, the frogs are going to depart from you and your houses and your servants, and they will only be left in the Nile, which is where they came from. So, again, I assume that it's back to normal because now there's frogs coming out of it. They're not red, or maybe they are. So, huh? Bloody frogs? Maybe they are. Who knows? Which would be even more gross. Right, Shane? Bloody frogs? No? Okay. Nothing. All right. So, that's the idea. Okay? Verse 13, the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died in the houses, in the courts, in the fields, so they piled them up in verse 14 in heaps, and the land became foul. But Pharaoh saw that there was relief, and he hardened his heart and did not let them go as the Lord had said. Okay, and you're going to see that theme in his life. Okay, he's concerned about the consequences, but he's not concerned about his sin. Okay, he wants to be removed from the consequences of his decisions, but he doesn't want to actually deal with the heart level of his issue. Okay, great, by the way, theological nugget in that, right? When we're in sin, are we more concerned about, God, remove the consequences of my sin? Or am I more concerned about the fact that I have grieved you at a heart level, and regardless of what the consequences may be, that is what makes me pain, okay? It's a great filter to run through in your own life, okay? And I wrestle with that constantly, right? If, Lord, am I really pained over this issue because I know it's hurt you and hurt my relationship with you? Or am I just concerned because I'm going to get a spanking, right? And it's, or whatever, okay? So Pharaoh is the example of, listen, all I care about is the consequences, and once those are gone, we're good, okay? I don't care if I've offended God, okay? So plague 2, foul frogs, they're gone, okay? They dumped them in heaps. Pharaoh hardens his heart again, okay? Now we're going to get gnats, also pronounced gnats, I think, in 16 and following. So third plague, God's going to bring gnats, okay? It says to Aaron, stretch out your staff, strike the dust of the earth, and it may become as gnats in all the land. Verse 17, they did so. Aaron stretched out his staff with his hand, struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast, and all the dust of the earth became gnats through all the land of Egypt. Now, that's miserable, right? You've had frogs. You can, like, walk around them. You can step on crickets. You can go somewhere else, okay? When gnats are on you, it's like the fly yesterday that was in here that you're like, oh, leave me alone. Well, he's not on me, so it's fine. But it's ridiculously annoying, right? Like, you ever seen, like, cows in a pasture, and they're just kind of swatting their tail? And just, you're like, how do you deal with that, right? So I remember being overseas and mission trips and stuff, and there's other cultures that just handle that better than we do because we get so irritated by it. But it's like, ugh, you can only imagine. Just, they're not biting you. They're not miserable. They're just on you. And you're like, get off of me, right? So that's the idea, okay? Now, 18, watch this. Watch their magicians. So they try to produce more gnats. Again, thank you. These guys are just boneheads, I guess. But they couldn't. So from here on out, they're done. Like, they kept up with God in plague 1 and 2. But after that, they don't have the power to do what God can do. And watch their response. Verse 19, this is what they say.
The magician said to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God.
Meaning, this guy's bigger than us. Like, he's doing stuff that we can't do. And they tell Pharaoh, this is God. This is their God, okay? Not us and not our gods. But Pharaoh doesn't listen. Surprise, surprise. And his heart is hardened, okay? Now, fourth plague, we're going to get flies. So we get gnats, but bigger and more annoying, okay? Again, verse 20, Pharaoh is in the Nile. And as he comes out of the water, possibly during his religious ceremony, Moses, you tell him, let my people go. And if you don't, you're going to get more issues, okay? Now watch what God does in verse 21 and 22. Keep reading there.
If you do not let my people go, I will send swarms of flies on you and your officials, on your people and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians will be full of flies, and even the ground where they are. But on that day, I will deal differently with the land of Goshen, where my people live. No swarms of flies will be there, so that you will know that I, the Lord, am in this land.
Okay, I told you backwards. So the first three, Israel is not exempt from, all the last seven, they are. Okay, so God says, now I'm going to make a distinction, okay? Just so you know that I'm a really big God, you're getting them and Goshen's not. Like, these are right next to each other. So Goshen's going to have no flies, you're going to have flies. Just so you understand that I'm going to put in verse 23 a division between my people and your people, and tomorrow the sign shall occur. So exactly as God says is what's going to happen, okay? 24, the Lord did so. There came great swarms of insects to the house of Pharaoh, to the houses of his servants. And the land was laid waste because of the swarms of insects in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh called Moses and says to Aaron, go sacrifice to your God within the land. Okay? You're going to see Pharaoh is going to offer four compromises, if you will, to Moses and Aaron. Okay? This is the first. What is the compromise in verse 25? In the land. Go worship. Great. Go worship your God. But you have to do it here. What did God say? Worship me, 3-day journey, right? You got to go. And Moses is going to say, mm-mm. 26, read that.
But Moses said, that would not be right. The sacrifices we offer the Lord our God would be detestable to the Egyptians.
So what's his answer? Again, what do you love about Moses and how he says that?
It'll offend you guys.
It'll offend you guys. We don't want to offend you, right? He doesn't say, no, God said 3 days journey. He paints it in such a way where he's saying, no, Pharaoh, I don't want to offend you. Our worship is offensive to you, so we're going to go away from you to do that. If we sacrifice what is an abomination to the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not then stone us? So there's consequences to this, right? So we must go a 3-day journey into the wilderness, just as God has commanded us. But he paints it in a way that's very respectful of Pharaoh, okay? Pharaoh says, now, okay, you don't like that? Here's compromise number 2. 28, read that.
Pharaoh said, I will let you go to offer sacrifices to the Lord your God in the desert, but you must go very far away.
Okay, but you must not go very far away. That word's important. That's right. It's inspired as well. All scripture. So you can go. You can worship. You just can't go 3 days. You can go like, you know, yeah, maybe a day or whatever, right? So let's do that, okay? Moses basically says, and he tells him, do not let, at the end of verse 29, Pharaoh deal deceitfully again in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. He says, listen, Pharaoh, no more deals, right? This is how it's going to be. We're going to go. We're going to go 3 days journey. We're taking our cattle. We're taking our wives. We're taking our kids, and we're going to go worship. And this is not a compromise. This is not a business negotiation. This is how it's going down. We're going to win. You need to relent, okay? And obviously, he's not going to, okay? Verse 32, Pharaoh hardened his heart this time, and he did not let the people go, okay? So they can't reach a deal. Surprise, surprise. So now we're going to get things ramped up, okay? Now, to this point, what we have seen is annoyances for the most part. Now it turns to blood. Hey, you can't drink. You found a way around it. Mile goes back, more than likely, right? You got frogs. Now you got no frogs. You got gnats. You got no gnats. It was an annoyance. But we haven't seen any permanent, like, issues that are problematic. From 5 and forward, it's now going to become, listen, there's now consequences, long-lasting consequences to your decisions, okay? So now we're going to see in verse 3, where does he say it? This is going to be now the plague that is going to be put on the livestock. We're going to see our first things begin to die, okay? Through 9 verse 3, read that. Yikes, right? So that, again, just kind of a punking to the Egyptians. Verse 6, the Lord did this on the morrow, and all the livestock of Egypt died, but of the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one died. Now, what happens when you start losing cattle and horses and sheep? What does that affect? That's your food. Okay, how about horses? They don't need horses. What do they do with those? It's transportation. That's your army. Right? You got horse-drawn chariots. This is pretty big. Like, this is affecting your livelihood, okay? You can't transport stuff. You can't eat stuff. Like, this is a big deal, okay? Verse 7, Pharaoh said, and behold, there was not even one of the livestock of Israel dead, but the heart of Pharaoh was hardened again, and he did not let the people go. So he just says, the heck with it. No, okay? Verse 8, now we're going to get plague 6, and we're going to see disease on now not just livestock, but also on man, okay? Verse 8, this is kind of an interesting way to paint this, but this is how God does it. Watch that. Can you imagine, like, I don't know, what is this, like chicken pox? But it's just like everybody's got skin lesions and boils and itchy, pussy, nasty, right? Right, Jane? That's good. So okay, so gross, right? And again, all Pharaoh has to do is relent and say, y'all go. Okay, I got it, and I'm not winning, and this is gonna go poorly for me, okay? The magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, and the boils were on the magicians as well as all the Egyptians. That's funny, right? Where are you guys? You want to try to recreate this? Oh, you're back home rubbing ointment on your pussy boils. So sorry you couldn't be here, right? So, Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. He did not listen to them, just as the Lord had spoken, okay? So now we've got man and beast with boils, and a lot of those beasts died. We're going to find out in this next plague. If they brought some of the beast indoors or what have you, or removed them, they were safe. And in 13 and following, with the hail that's about to come, everything is going to die that's not brought inside, okay? So God says, okay, we're going to bring now hail from the sky. Verse 16, indeed, for this reason, I have allowed you to remain in order to show you my power, in order to proclaim my name throughout the earth. So God says, I'm going to bring some stuff, and you're going to continue to see that this is about me. I am the one that's powerful. And he says in verse 19, therefore, bring your livestock and whatever you have in the field to safety. Every man and beast that is not that is found in the field and is not brought home, when the hail comes down on them, they will die. So this is Moses saying to Pharaoh, bring your stuff inside, okay? If it's outside, man or beast, it's dead, okay? Verse 20, the one among the servants of Pharaoh who feared the word of the Lord made his servants and his livestock flee into their houses, but he who paid no regard to the word of the Lord left his servants and his livestock in the field, which is amazing that at this point you would go, that's probably not going to happen. Like, what have we seen so far? It's like, are you kidding me? You've seen frogs and gnats and blood and boils and, like, come on, guys, figure this out. It's coming. It's going to be bad, okay? 22, here it comes.
When Moses stretched out his staff towards the sky, the Lord sent thunder and hail and lightning flashed down to the ground. So the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. Hail fell and lightning flashed back and forth. It was the worst storm in all the land of Egypt since it had become a nation.
That's pretty significant, right? Now, you guys don't know what storms are, okay? Because you live in California and you've never seen a thunderstorm in your life, okay? What we have here is like weak sauce sissy stuff, okay? In Texas, we live through tornado warnings about 4 times a year, and when it rains, it freaking rains, and it shakes your windows, and you wake up, and you can't sleep through it, and you feel like there's someone outside your window with a cannon. I mean, that's a thunderstorm. You can only imagine, and we get hail there as well, that's like, go inside, or you're going to die. If you get hit with hail on the head, that's like golf ball size or bigger, you die, right? And it's not uncommon for people to like, take pictures of hailstones that are baseball size, softball size even at times I've seen, right? We had, most of them are pretty small. They're like little peas and they, you know, dent your shingles or whatever. But like you get a car lot in Texas, right? And you get a quarter size hail, done. I mean, it's done. And it's a, they call, you'll see signs all the time, hail sale, right? And it's like, come get your dented car, and this needs a new window and a new roof, right? But when that stuff hits, it's destructive. It's awful, okay? Not only does it hit man and beast, what else does it hit? They're plants, which means what? Food. So now you have a famine, right? So all of your crops that are out growing in the field in the middle of the wrong season, you now get hail on the crops, okay? So you've lost your food. You've lost now lots of lives. This is getting really, really bad for Pharaoh, okay? He can't feed his people. Animals are dying. Yep.
Would they have, like, known what hail was? Cause
it's a great question. They do now. They get good rains in Israel. I'm not sure about the climate in Egypt so much, but it rains in a certain portion of the year. I would guess, yes, they've probably seen it, but not like this. So this would have been nuanced to them, okay? And literally, it's when you get a big thunderstorm, even as an adult, you get a little freaked out. I mean, they're significant. And we live in houses with brick and stucco and 50-year like warranty roofs that are, you know, this is a different deal, okay? They did not have the protection like we do in our modern days, okay? Now, 25, the hail struck all the land in the field throughout the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and the hail struck every plant of the field and shattered every tree in the field. Now, that's a big deal, right? When you're shattering trees with hail, okay? But, verse 26, only in the land of Goshen, where the sons of Israel were, there was no hail. Okay, so God is gracious. 27, watch Pharaoh's response this time. First time we see this.
Then Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron. This time I have sinned, he said to them. The Lord is in the right, and I and my people are in the wrong.
Right? I mean, that's what we wanted to hear this whole time. I have sinned. God is righteous. I have blown it. I mean, that sounds like good, like heart level repentance, right? But we know Pharaoh, it's not, okay? So. The other six, not so much. But the seventh one, yeah, that's on me, right? But you get the idea that, yeah, something's happening. And again, the problem is God obviously is going to remove some of the consequences of that. There's still going to be death everywhere. And as soon as he does that, verse 35, Pharaoh's heart was hardened. He did not let the sons of Israel go, just as the Lord had spoken through Moses. Okay, so the bookends of that are, it's the same pattern every time. Okay, but in between that, 28, Pharaoh says, hey, Moses, make supplication to the Lord, for there's been enough of God's thunder and hail, and I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. So go talk to God for me. And Moses says to him, as soon as I go out of the city, I will spread out my hands to the Lord. In verse 29, the thunder will cease. There will be no more hail, that you may know that there is on the earth, that all the earth is the Lord's. Okay, so he tells them that's what's going to happen. But as for you and your servants, know that you do not yet fear the Lord your God. And we get the parentheses in 31 and 32 that basically says, everything's ruined. You have no more crops. Moses goes out of town, verse 33. The hail stops, and Pharaoh says, perfect. That's what I really wanted. Now the consequences are removed. I didn't really sin. Okay, so that's the idea. All right. So let's stop there today. We will pick up on 8, 9, and 10, the worst of the plagues, tomorrow, and we will watch the people of the land leave. Dang it, we don't have tomorrow? You guys aren't coming in the morning? Fine. I was going to be here, but if y'all don't want to come, that's fine. You're not committed. All right.